Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio. What's up, yo, yo, yo? Welcome, friends, to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. That is the sound of bottles clanking. Hi, I'm Matthew Ramsey, Wile E. Coyote, Hamburger Haberdasher, and Spamophile.
I'm Eddie Kim, D.C. writer, bartender, and 9th grade symphonic orchestra second chair violist. Damn you, Ben Yoon, for stealing my spot. It made me cry last night.
Show off.
No. Every week, we share a shift drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, and brewers, and pretty much anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. Today, we are joined by friend, industry veteran, multimedia journalist, so many hyphens, and writer, Victoria Milko. Who flew all the way here from Myanmar to be on our show today?
I think that's a record. We had
furthest?
Yeah.
How long was your flight?
I mean, I think 21 hours in the air.
How tired are your arms?
I don't know. Hey.
Oh, wow.
Oh, come on.
I know. That's fair.
Jerks.
I just got that.
We got Jack back in the studio today.
Jack.
I'm here.
Back on the buttons, man.
Yep.
Pew, pew.
It's been a while, actually. I think the last time I was here was with Damon when you guys got me too drunk too early. And I never came back.
That was a very sloppy show.
Yep.
Well, you made it back. Speaking of back, Victoria, you are back. You've been gone for a little while.
Yeah, I think it's almost 2.5 years since I put down my apron in DC's industry and decided to head back and pick up a camera in Burma.
Right on. How's it feel to be back? You're here for what? A couple weeks, right?
No, I had all week in D.C.
All week in
yeah,
D.C.
Yeah, I had to go see what Trump land looked out in the rest of America. So Florida, Kentucky, New York.
All the hot spots.
All the hot spots.
And what's the survey says? What's it like to be back in D.C.?
I mean...
Anything changed?
There's a hotel here now that I had never seen before with like more neon lighting.
Yeah.
There's less go-go being played on the sidewalks, it seems, which really kind of throws me off balance.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how DC's new creative class, old creative class, is all coming together and what the city's looking like these days.
Welcome home.
Definitely a lot. Actually, I noticed that this weekend, too. There's definitely a lot less go-go on the streets. Except this weekend was art all night, so everyone was playing it, you know, kind of in a...
But no one was dancing to it,
right,
which is the point,
right? It was
right?
Sort of a contrived way.
You can play it all you want,
yes,
but until you start moving, like, what's the point?
Eddie, I bet you do a mean wobble.
Is that a go-go move?
Nah, not really.
I don't know that.
But it's like literally every like neighborhood party. You got to know how to wobble.
I know how to floss.
Crickets.
prove it or there's no pictures of some proof. All right, what are we drinking today?
Well, Victoria, you chose a Bee's Knees.
A Bee's Knees.
Which is very timely because we are coming to the end of Bee's Knees Week here in D.C. and actually across the U.S., which is a charity event to bring attention to the cocktail, Bee's Knees, but also, you know.
Bring back the bees.
Yeah. Yeah, bring back the bees.
It's all about the
honey. Which is, so the classic Bee's Knees is gin, honey, and lemon.
And
chicken.
It was designed to like kind of the lemon and honey were to mask the taste of moonshine.
Right, right, exactly. But this one's actually a variation that we serve at my bar almost half of the year. As soon as it turns warm enough for people to come out wearing all their floral dresses and patio weather, it's called the Rite of Spring. So it's honey infused with chamomile, London dry gin, lemon juice, lavender bitters.
Victoria, why is this your drink?
I was actually introduced to this at the bar Eddie's working at, Room 11.
Right on.
A few years ago. Yeah.
How apropos.
Take a seat, Eddie. Yeah. So a few years ago, I was introduced to it at Room 11 by a bartender there because I wanted something sweet with a little kick to it, refreshing. I knew I would have a hard time with whiskey after, you know, a 12-hour shift. So yeah. Bee's Knees it was. Sweet. You can make it anywhere in the world. Refreshing.
And you have your own variety of Bee's Knees over at Tailed Goat. They have a drink named after you.
Oh, you mean the Milko and Honey?
The Milko and Honey.
Oh, now I get it.
I got to serve you the other night when you came in to Tailed Goat, and you had your first ever Milko and Honey.
I did. It wasn't the last one, though, that night.
No, it wasn't.
But, yeah, Jill, John, Bill, the whole squad at Tailed Goat, which is the last restaurant I worked at in D.C., they are my family. They helped raise me in this city, and they sent me a picture of the menu a few months ago, I think, at this point. And I was just like, I don't want to learn wine. Like, get out of here with that. And they're like, no, actually read it, Milko. Get your act together. And I read it, and I was standing in the middle of Burma. Like, I almost burst into tears because it made me realize how much I miss D.C. Right and then on. Seeing people actually order it and put it on the internet. And
it's so funny. They're like, I'll get this milk and honey. I'm like, actually, it's Milko. but I'm both of you guys, and I'm super jealous by this, you guys both have your own, like, drink.
I have drinks, but
you have drinks.
I have drinks. I mean, Room 11.
What else you got?
What, my drink?
Yeah, you got the Eddie Kim.
Oh, the Eddie Kim. Souls. Okay, I have one good drink.
Queen Victoria.
What?
So Room 11, and I also had the 11th and Clifton, which it's not named after me clearly, but it was a drink that came from my experiences. So
I just want one drink, guys. Can we?
What are you gonna do for it?
Just
you have to do something.
Strike up a relationship with a bartender, and they'll name drinks after you.
Yeah,
that's what.
If only I knew a bartender.
So, do you know Eddie Kim? I mean, you can strike some.
It's called the Great Ramazzini. All right, mezcal, chartreuse.
No, your drink would be Fernet infused with marijuana.
Marijuana,
unlabeled. So you have no idea what the hell you're drinking.
Is there marijuana drinks yet in this town? Because I just got back, and let me tell you, the streets smell delicious right now.
Right?
I haven't
it's everywhere.
So.
Not at bars, but I know CBD-infused beers are now becoming a thing,
okay.
Which right. is pretty cool. I think there's a new bar that I heard about opening up in D.C. that's going to be doing some CBD beer.
Okay, so that's allowed.
List, yeah.
But I kind of feel like the THC in cocktails probably isn't allowed.
But if you gift it, does it? That's not allowed. If you gift it, then because you could say, here's your shift drink, a little gift for you.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
But you can do the CBD like without the active THC in a cocktail.
Yes.
Like
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Jack's, that's boring.
Jack's voice of God.
Oh my goodness! Sorry. I miss your sultry voice.
It's so velvety. all right. Well, before we dig into it, let's do some week in recap.
I am very happy to see this past weekend. If you haven't already watched it, Chef's Table Season 5 premiered on Netflix. And we have the first episode is a Shift Drink. It's directed by Shift Drink alum Abby Fuller. It's about Christina Martinez, who runs Barbacoa in Philly. It's a great, you know, coming to America story.
Congratulations, Abby. You're a wonderful storyteller. It was beautiful.
Oh, you watched it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
No, it's awesome.
Okay.
Also new bar, cocktail bar opened up, Destination Wedding, replacing two birds, one stone. The mastermind, Mr. Lucas, he's gone all wedding on us. But we got what? Negronis, draft margaritas.
Nitro draft Negronis. The nitro margarita. A lot of Instagrammable material, very, very tongue-in-cheek with everything that you can think of that that millennials will kind of go overboard with.
Yeah, so congratulations, guys. That's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Also, in a growing trend of heckling politicians while the eight, Ted Cruz was chased out of Field Mari earlier this week by protesters chanting, "We Believe Survivors," confronting Cruz over his support with Angry Brett.
Yeah, restaurants are no longer safe haven. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Better luck next time.
And I think we want to give a big props up to the Washington Post, the OG, you know, food journalists here in the city. They just got a number of awards from the Association of Food Journalists. Tom Seizema picked up a Best Restaurant Critic. Mara Judkis won an award for the story. And
really
the,
powerful story.
The food section itself won an award for Best Food Section in America, too. So,
yeah, so we're kind of living it now. Sorry, San Francisco.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of crap to cover in the city, so they are busy all the time.
We should probably announce that we might be having Mr. Seizema on our show in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so
best restaurant critic in the country.
Yeah,
no big deal.
The Fall Dining Guide is going to come out, and so hopefully we can pick his brain on some of his picks.
But back to Victoria.
Who dat?
All right, Victoria, we asked you to prepare two truths, one lie. A little thing we do to kind of get to know our guests. Hey, yo!
Two truths, one lie.
Okay, are you guys the one that are answering this or figuring out
my
line?
We figured out.
You guys have seen me through some weird stuff, so. Okay. I was swimming with barracudas earlier this year. Aretha Franklin once sang an anthem to me.
Oh, man.
And I can't lie.
Wait a minute, this is one of those logic puzzles.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, this is that classic
one. It's a freaking logic puzzle. God damn it. Matthew's hungover.
So I'm really hungover. This is no fun to me. Can you pass the bee's knees, please?
Oh, yes.
Is that just your second? Come on.
I'm going to need some fuel for this. I think she can lie. Which means...
Right. No, she can't lie. She can't lie, so that statement was a true. So that statement was true.
Come on, nerd.
What was the second one? I like watching you guys struggle through this.
What was the second one?
Oh, Aretha Franklin. Come on.
Aretha Franklin.
Forgot the queen?
And the barracudas.
No, Aretha Franklin did not sing to Victoria.
Was it to you specifically?
Are they allowed to have follow-up questions?
Nope.
Okay. What?
Oh, come
okay,
on.
Jack. All right. This is our game. Stay I'm saying, I mean, you might have your own, you might have many cocktails, but I don't believe Aretha Franklin sang.
Okay, I'm going to say Aretha.
Yeah,
I agree.
Number two.
Final answer. She sang to me, guys.
Son of a bitch!
Inauguration. First time Obama, I stayed in the hotel room next to hers by chance. And I caught her up in the hallway and I fawned over her and said, my earliest childhood memories are my mom, who was a single mom at the time, singing your songs to me, right? Like, that's it. And then Aretha Franklin, in her big hat and her beautiful outfit and her little entourage,
just bust
out in front of me.
You got to see the hat, her crown, before
Which is
anyone
like, it's
else.
It's in the museum now, right? It's at the...
Yes.
Yeah, so I saw that in the flesh.
That just gave me goosebumps.
That's crazy.
And that's a DC moment, right?
That really
that is.
That is
a true, like, especially that era with Obama's first inauguration. Like, I think if you're here, you remember the city was just lit up, right? Like, there's nothing like it.
That's amazing. Always our president.
My dad ran with the Olympic torch in Detroit and passed it to Aretha Franklin, same person. That's my Aretha story.
I was like, is that your two truths and a lie? Or?
No, that's my lie. No, that's true.
Aretha's my mother.
I met you way back when at the Boundary Stone.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Working with Ellen. Before that, you were at Sticky Rice.
Do you want the list?
Yeah, I want the list.
Okay.
I started at Sticky Rice as a host, and then I bartended there, and then I went to Boundary Stone, and then I was at Little Cerro, and then doing the phones and working at Comey in the daytime, and then I went over to Tail Up Goat. And I also worked two shifts at Bistro de Quoi during a hurricane.
What?
So.
That better be on your resume.
Oh, and 1905. I don't want to forget those guys. Rest in peace, 1905.
Yes.
But I also opened my first bottle of wine ever at 1905 when I was 21, legally.
How'd it go?
There was a giant, beautiful mirror behind the bar at 1905 and this dining room off to the side. And I remember they're like, okay, we need champagne. Like, there's a group of men here. Like, get your act together. They're so kind, so patient, but that's how I felt they were speaking.
Yeah.
And I went to open the champagne. And, of course, being a total amateur, I took the cage off, go to, like, release the cork. The bottle was warm. It shoots off, hits the mirror behind the bar that I'm staring at, and launches into the dining room.
Nice.
And thankfully, all... the guys in the dining room had a good sense of humor and started cheering and screaming and like fist pumping for me.
Yeah.
And that at that moment when they started fist pumping, Tony, who was the manager and owner of 1905, looked at me and he's like, you did okay, but never do that again. You know? And the mirror stayed intact. So that started my wine career.
The very first time I ever opened a wine bottle, it was for some friends at a new restaurant I was working at. And they're like, oh yeah, like Matt, tell us about this wine. I'm like, okay, I'm super nervous and sweaty. And I ended up twisting the corkscrew in, or the wine key in, and I like snapped the top of the bottle off in my hand.
So strong, Matt.
And blood just starts shooting everywhere. It was horrifying. It was absolutely horrifying. And that was how I started in the industry. Was...
Dude, if you don't bleed at a restaurant in front of people at least once, like, are you actually a server?
Yeah.
No.
I recently had a Band-Aid on my head, too. It was embarrassing. But anyways, what about you, Eddie? I remember sabering champagne.
I've sabered champagne. I should saber that all the time and then try to drink out of the bottle and subsequently cut my lip. I remember
cool,
doing
Eddie.
That.
No, cool.
And I was experienced by then, so I don't remember my first bottle that I opened. It's probably at Room 11. That place taught me everything I know.
I mean, I know you still look like you're 21 or like 12, but how old were you when you started there?
I was 27.
So you started popping bottles at 27.
I'm a late bloomer.
Well.
Was going into the service industry a quarter life crisis for you?
Moving to Sweden. I lived in Sweden for a bit. That was my quarter life crisis.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like how this just became about Eddie all of a sudden.
Well, I knew this was going to happen.
This is all I've been wanting. I flew from Myanmar for this moment. Could you pass the bee's knees?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
So, Eddie, thanks for coming on our show.
Yeah.
Victoria, co-host. Were there any DC staples that you kind of just couldn't wait to eat or drink? Or
I feel like a monster right now. So I went to Tail Up Goat and ate almost the entire menu. I wish I'd done the whole thing. And then I went to Comey the next day.
Oh, my God. Did you really?
Yeah, I went to Comey the next day. So in like a 24-hour period, I probably had about 4 bottles of wine and every pasta that's ever been handmade in this city. But honestly, Taqueria Habanero, like meats and foods.
And tonight you're going up to Back to Roses, right?
Maybe.
Okay. I just blew up your spot.
I was like...
does Comey feel any different now that it has a star?
I mean... I mean it when I say I credit Comey with being one of the reasons I am successful in my career now as a journalist and just being in tune with people and understanding someone's needs, right? So it didn't feel any different because you just walk in and you fall into the same pattern. They might just have like more exposed brick wall now. But
so you start serving people like Comey, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, naturally, I just walked in with like an apron on and like I went downstairs. I bought actually a bunch of snacks for the kitchen because I'm like, you know, kitchen can get beer after this shift. So I'm going to bring them Cheez-Its, Oreos, Cheetos. Like, what do I want? And I dropped them off to the Little Cerro girls first because I also worked at Little Cerro. And I'm like, don't let those Comey wolves have all the snacks. Like, you make sure you take your floral dress and go get some snacks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it felt great. It was
I think that is the move, right? Like, I still remember when Jill came to Pineapple and Pearls and she brought like 15 Cholitos.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, so much better than beers. Because, yeah, we get beers. Like,
so that has seriously become the new gold standard for gifts at a restaurant, for a restaurant opening.
Cholitos?
It's not a bottle of champagne.
That's a gold standard for my wedding one day, yeah. Right? Like, Cholitos, top of the top. Anna and Scott are still just smashing it in that shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just going to blow up their spot. Like, if you go into a restaurant, bring them a dozen Cholitos from Meats and Foods, you will be treated like
royalty.
And bring for the rest of your life.
Bring one vegetarian thing for the new guy who hasn't started eating meat yet.
Also sour candy. That's the other
way. Right.
Man, yeah, that's a baller move. So you've had all the pasta, you've done all the things. Have you had your half smoke? Have you
like 7. But yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been here, I think, 4 days and managed to have like 3 dinners each night and things like that. But
the bang bang.
There's also new spots, right? Like, I'm really interested in seeing what the people that I started working with as a host back in the day are opening now, right?
Yeah.
Like, we have our old staples. Two Amy's is back open. Like, we've all gotten down and prayed 5 times a day to it.
Oh, goodness gracious. We forgot to mention that.
That should have been number one.
Two Amy's is back open after 2 months closed due to water damage.
Yeah. Actually, Jack, do you have a sound effect for that?
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah.
So yeah, everyone go there, get all the pizza and anchovies, little fishy things, cured meats. It's pretty much back to normal from what I hear, lunch and dinner.
We're going to step out for a second, and when we come back, we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive into what it means to be a part of the industry and leave it.
Be right back. This music from Jubilee is called Wine Up.
Pack it up, pack it up, and me boy nicely. body, yeah. Watch me a move up me body, yeah. Watch me a wine up me body, yeah. Watch me a move up me body, yeah. Wine up, girl, up, wine up your body. Wine up, girl, up, wine up your body.
What's up? This is Jubilee, and you are listening to Full Service Radio.
Wine up, girl, up, wine up your body. Me and my friends really comfy turn up the party. Watch me a wine and I get naughty. I sick back me love, not to drink and I see. Watch me a wine and I get naughty. Party turn up, party turn up.
And for more Jubilee's music, soundcloud.com/JubileeDJ. Coming right back.
All right, welcome back to Full Service Radio. I'm Eddie Kim. I'm with Matthew Ramsey.
What's up?
And Victoria Milko.
Hi there.
Photojournalist extraordinaire. Actually, you just literally just broke out during that that little commercial for... You broke out like a gold Lomo Instant.
Eddie, most people don't know what those words mean.
I don't know either, actually. So
I just, it's
a camera, a gold camera.
So I don't have mail in Myanmar, right? Like the postal system does not work. So every time I come here, I ship all my packages to my friends' restaurants over the course of 6 months. And this is one of those things that I came back and I was like, oh my God. I actually have a hipster camera now, finally. Like, I take so many digital photos every single day. The amount of digital photos I take, it's nice to hold some molecules in your hand instead of just looking at pixels all day.
I'm just asking past the business.
Oh, we drank it all. We're done.
I say we're done here.
This is
I thought that's why we were having a break, was to get more.
We were also drinking it on the rocks, too, so it's like, it's going to go down so quickly. Yeah, we're done.
Cool.
All right, good show. See you guys next
all
week.
Right. All right.
Bye, thanks. I'll fly
I think there's
back
a,
now.
There's a bottle of Brooklyn Gin hanging around somewhere.
There is. It's right here. You want it?
Don't threaten us with a good time.
It's going to get worse.
Before we jumped out, though, you were talking about how like working at Comey kind of made you a better journalist, which is kind of what you're doing right now.
It's exactly what I'm doing
it's
right
kind
now.
Of exactly yeah,
there's no
what
kind
you're doing
of there.
Right.
Yeah, not just Comey. I mean, I think every restaurant I've worked at has really given me something, whether that it's the ability to not, you know, scream my head off when someone throws up on the bar, or being tuned into people's needs or how they react to things, noticing when someone needs something, and just general hospitality, right? I end up in a lot of places that they've never seen a foreigner. They've never seen a white person before. And you're a representative. You need to make sure that you ask them, can I help you peel the beans like grandma? Can I make eggs? Can I you clean up after yourself? You take care of the people around you. And you're just aware of yourself, like even spatial awareness, right? Like you're probably sleeping in someone's house and they kick someone out so that you could stay there for the night to tell their story.
Right.
And the industry brings that all together. Taking care of other people, being aware of yourself, just being in tune with someone besides yourself, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, hospitality is, it's people skills, right? Like you get to read a different subtext of what people are putting out there and how to kind of accommodate that.
Yeah, and for people that don't know where Myanmar Burma is, right, like we're smashed between Bangladesh, India, China, Laos, Thailand. So, I mean, we're getting South Asia, we're getting Southeast Asia, and in Asian cultures, food, man, like food is what brings it all together. So
yeah.
In Myanmar, the first thing they say to each other when they're like greeting each other, they go like, Taminsa bibila, have you eaten rice today? Like, how's it going, right? And that really means a lot in so many cultures, so coming from a food background and a community-based background made it a little bit easier, I think, to dive in as like a tattooed white girl in the middle of Burma.
Sure.
Yeah. But the Burma is in the middle of all of these cultures that kind of basically smashing into each other. And last year you did a piece that's on NPR about you took a trip to a tea farm.
I live at tea shops. Oh, no, the tea farm was in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, the tea farm was in Sri Lanka.
But I mean, tea shops are a thing in Burma too, right? And I spend probably like 4 mornings a week going to a tea shop, which is actually like a little tiny corner shop that you sit on a tiny stool and they serve you food. And it's mostly run by child labor, unfortunately. But yeah, it's a big part of culture. I mean, tea, right? In Asia, come on.
But at this particular farm, it was basically Tamils and
Sinhalese
like working together side by side.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd be fighting each other, actually.
Yeah, so you know, the massive civil war in Sri Lanka where there's different ethnic groups and religious groups going at each other. But I went to, and I learned about actually this farm, I learned about while I was a server at Tail Up Goat. One of my Tail Up Goat regulars was like, you know what? You want to go to Sri Lanka? You should check out my friend's tea farm. I'm like, what's your friend doing with a tea farm, right? So again, the industry like hands me so many different presents, but Yeah, I went to this farm in Sri Lanka, and it's Sinhalese and Tamil people working from the local village instead of being imported labor. And this farm does revenue sharing, not profit sharing. So they give money, they do education, they provide healthcare. And it was just beautiful. So I send people there all the time now, and the guys who own it still hit me up to this day and are like, where are you? Come to the tea farm. Or they try to meet up with me here. Or I think one of them is actually coming for his birthday to stay with me in Myanmar this year, since right I can on. Actually afford a guest bedroom finally.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. All right, so Victoria's going to start her own Airbnb bed and breakfast.
Yo, that's illegal in Myanmar, so don't do that, Eddie.
Oh, really?
Shit.
But you can still come hang out.
Well, it's always interesting, though, because, like, I mean, kind of de facto, like, working in the industry, like, you're working with people that this isn't their, like, full-time thing. This wasn't your full-time thing. Like, I mean, you worked full-time in the industry, but I'm saying, like, you're a photographer, you're a journalist, you're a writer. Eddie, you're a scientist,
DC,
you're a designer, you're a consultant.
DC is a particular place where everyone has other interests. Especially, well, I mean, I'm going to say about 10 years ago, nobody was a career industry person.
Right.
Barely.
No, ever. Yeah.
It's changing, though, sometimes, which I think is really
cool. It's changing,
cool, yeah. Right? Like, people that are willing to lean into the fact that they're passionate about XYZ and food.
Oh, very much so.
You know?
And I feel like I consider myself a part of that. But it's like, you're always working with people that, like, oh, like, you're really good at this, but you're also a really good fashion designer or a photographer.
Your photography. I remember when I first met you, I was like, is this dude into porn or burgers? I can't tell which one.
It's definitely both.
And it turned out to be porn burgers making it, you know, respect to the mashup.
Oh, yeah. That happened.
No judgment.
No, but it's like, but I mean, that's the thing, like, hospitality, like, it gets me going. Like, it excites me. Like, I don't know what part of me, why that works like that.
I mean, for the moment, hospitality is about accessibility and making connections with people. And
yeah,
for all intents and purposes, this city is a city of A-type personalities and, like, really, really smart people. And sometimes you have to have other interests to really... To connect with certain groups.
And, you know, I'm going to jump in on this, too. Yeah. As a woman, as a server in this town, right?
Yeah.
Like, people automatically were just like, oh, you know, kind of stereotyping, like, just speaking down to me. I also look like I'm still 12 years old, even though I'm 28. And I think busting out the fact of, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I was reporting on human rights issues in the first democratic election of the country when I was still working at a restaurant.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Even just saying to people, like, you know what, I don't have a side hustle. I just really care about food, and I love what I do, unlike you with your government job.
Right.
Like, I think the women in this industry that have so much, a diverse portfolio of what they're doing, whether it be running vermouth, writing articles, you know, volunteering, working for the government, it's cool to see.
That was a cat.
That was a cat shout out.
Cat. I haven't seen you yet. Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting to see those old walls come down of the old white dudes on the hill who meet someone, especially a young server, and you're like, yeah, actually, I'm putting myself through med school. Sorry.
Well, and very much so. And Jill was on the show, and we kind of briefly talked about just, like, third wave hospitality and what that means, where it's just like, this is what I want to do, this is where we're at, and this is kind of what it means to be all in on hospitality.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I have a question here about...
all right, Eddie, come on.
Great segue, Eddie. On your Instagram feed, the last picture you posted was actually your grandfather's refugee stateless person papers, which you said eventually led to your family coming to America.
Yeah.
I mean, with everything that's kind of happening in the States and anything like that, like, what's your perspective on?
I'm a journalist. I have no perspectives, remember?
Oh, wow.
Come on.
But I'll share...
There we go.
My thoughts on my family, my personal experiences, because, you know, no bias or things like that.
We also happen to have another journalist in the room right now, Kristen, who's in...
Another woman journalist.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a double powerhouse. So I'm going to get her opinion real quick on after you answer yours.
Yeah. So my family came to America because my grandfather was a Catholic in Yugoslavia back during communism. Hmm. And you're not allowed to be religious back then. So people literally showed up to his door and he'd been tipped off that they're coming to kill you. So he escaped through Europe into Germany and Spain, and eventually by rubbing a broom handle every single day to get calluses on his hands, because he was an art director, managed to get a worker visa and come to America.
That's like an astonishing detail.
It's amazing. And I came back to America actually to spend time with him because he's 90 and I'm one of the only people in the family, and I really wanted this family history. Also, I want that EU passport. So, and I mean, he was a refugee, and our family comes from that. Like, we had nothing when we came to this country not too long ago. And as a white person, I have inherent privilege, right? Like, sure. I'm on off the bat. But I also have to explain to a lot of people, including refugees that I work with in Myanmar, that refugees look like everything. You don't look at me and think that I'm from a refugee family, a girl that grew up in D.C., sure. right? Like, it really takes a lot to break through those walls and to relate to people. But obviously, with everything going on, my own family on my father's side is quite conservative. And I often remind them, like, do you understand that we wouldn't be here right now? Like, we would be probably dead, honestly, like we wouldn't exist, or we'd be working in Kosovo, where 43% of the population is going through a brain drain. Like, 43% of youth is unemployed there right now.
Right.
So I just think that the easiest way to have people that maybe don't perhaps align with a more liberal idea on immigration is to explore their own roots and understand where they came from. And that was a big part of my trip here, was to pull my family aside that is perhaps not voting for the same people as I, and be sure. like, do you know where we came from? And show them the photos.
Yeah.
And also for myself too, of course, because Grandpa Opa was very handsome.
Yeah.
Wait, where did you find the photo?
Intentionally this time came to America and was like, hey, I want you to tell me the things that you wouldn't say before. And he pulled out photos of him in army fatigues when he went back to fight in the Civil War in the 90s. And, you know, spoke to me about, I was like, what was the thing you found weird when you came to America? Because I'm standing here in America now, like, whoa, the soda aisle is huge, right? Like,
right.
And Opa was like, all the houses were made of wood, right? Like, that was really weird, because he comes from where, like, Game of Thrones is filmed, and as you've seen, it's all stone and things like that. So I went into it, and he, you know, leaned into my questions, which is nice, because again, as a journalist, incessant questions, it's annoying most of the time how much I want to know about people.
I remember asking my grandma kind of a similar thing, and just kind of getting a deeper dive into like her childhood and history, and she ended up like relaying that, because I always remember the story about her like sitting on Al Capone's lap, and like he like busted out this like switch knife and like opened up a prickly pear for her.
Yeah, your family comes from a bunch of bootleggers. Booze runners.
Yeah.
Tight.
It was super crazy, and she like told me the story, and like she was in car chases, like Elliot Ness was Kevin Costner, was chasing her. like as a child, she was putting on labels on bottles in a false attic when like the police came crashing in with like little hatchets and stuff, and she's been like shot at.
What have you done lately, Matthew?
I know. I drank too much last night.
I mean, Matthew dodged all the shots I fired at him at dinner the other night, so I'll give him that.
What did I dodge?
I don't know. I feel like I was, you know, a few bottles of wine in. Thank you, Bill. And whenever I get a few bottles of wine in, I'm like, oh yeah, white guy? Like, come on. No, but couldn't help myself. I was also home, back in my city for the first time in a year, so.
Yeah, no, it was really fun having you. Let's like, step aside to, like, Eddie and I were, like, kind of, we were drinking last night, and we got into this thing about rants retold.
Okay.
I feel like we get on shit. We do a shift drink, and like we always have stories about customers and things, like weird things happen when you're
dealing
with people.
Our show is called Shift Drink, but no matter what, we're in a glass box right now, and so we're not going to be as open as
yeah,
we could be.
Yeah. But you've had a lot of experience in the industry. Like, are there any like standout memories of just like super weird interactions?
Do you want to get gross?
Yeah, let's
you want to get real weird?
Let's get gross.
Okay. I was at an unnamed restaurant and it was snowing. And it was, you know, DC, like if we see a snowflake, we all freak out and become snowflakes. Like, we just don't know how to handle it. So it was snowing and there was plumbing problems at this establishment at the time. So there was a guy on the roof with like an industrial snake, you know, doing his thing. I have a packed bar. It is packed out. And all of a sudden, I hear this really strange noise, and I'm like, what is that? Next thing you know, industrial snake, the metal thing, bursts through the pipe. Oh, it's God. A sewage pipe.
Oh, God.
Sewage pipe bursts on top of me and floods the whole bar. My best friend, Julia Dan, like, runs in and tries to save my, you know, my nice watch and my nice purse that I bought with my, like, bar money.
Dan, or...
Julia.
Jack, do we have a fart? A fart?
No. I got that. That's like the best I've got for this. Oh, man.
Yeah. So
we run a classy radio show, Matthew.
Yeah. But you know, you gotta keep it real. This is what happens in the industry, yeah. right? Like, so I am covered in flecks of toilet paper and God only knows what else. And I run up to the other side of this establishment and I'm like,
I'm glad they wiped.
Yeah, you know, respect. I can understand how it's killing the environment.
All the best restaurant stories involve poop.
Yeah, yeah, it has to. Yeah, so I run over and I say to the owners, guys, come here, because they're in the middle of a conversation and they're brushing me off. And I'm like, no, guys, come here. And they brush me off again, like literally put their hand up. And then I finally stand in the middle of the restaurant and I'm like, the shit pipe just burst, and run back downstairs, run out back, look at the guy on the roof who is like still winding up the industrial snake. And he's like, don't worry, it's clean water. And at that point, I black out and somehow ripped my shirt off. And the next thing I know, I remember wearing like an oversized free beer t-shirt and having to continue working because the bar did not shut down.
Amazing.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, ever since that, I'm like, you know what? This prepped me through Burma, where in Burma, you know, it floods every day and you wade through feces water. So again, the industry just made me who I am today.
Oh, good old fecal water.
Old fecal water.
Do you have a poop story, Matthew?
No. When I lived in New York, I worked at J. Crew for like a couple months. Tight. And some guy, like, he took a shit in the fucking changing room.
Oh yeah, dude, that's the classic. You haven't done that? You haven't done that yet? Come on. Like, that's classic.
I just, like, wow. That's so amazing. Like, how do you, where does that come from? How does one get the gall to do that?
Eddie, you have one.
It was nicely shaped.
I do have one.
But I was like, I tell you want to share this poop story you have.
I won't tell the day or the events surrounding it because it'll give away where I was working. But I was wearing a dress that day. And
so you were at Wonderland.
So you were at a fish,
so I was like, a come
fish,
on, like
a fish concert.
Okay, thanks for calling me.
It's a Tuesday.
I was wearing a dress. I was bartending. And I had eaten something not great. So while I was bartending, I was, you know, going to the bathroom every 20-30 minutes. But thank God I was wearing a dress because it was easy access.
That's the story?
Did you have pockets?
Yeah, I thought there was going to be like more.
No, I was not covered in feces.
I was
waiting
for a bigger punchline.
Yeah. Eddie,
But I was wearing a nice red dress with blue flowers on it.
Did you buy it or did you borrow it?
I bought it. So and I still have it.
Oh, why don't you wear it?
Special occasion.
You knew I was coming. Come on.
I've gained a little bit of weight in my day.
Yo, no body shame. That's fine. That's fair. Big girls need love too.
I barely fit in it the first time. Yes.
Yeah, let's leave it on that.
But Matthew's wearing a nice floral shirt right now. Like, okay.
Cool story, Eddie. Cool story.
Okay. All right. We're going to play a little game we call Rapid Fire.
Time for the payback.
All right. Rapid Fire.
Okay, this is tip of the tongue, Victoria. You come at us with your very first response. Favorite noodle dish, go.
Soba noodle.
Whoa. That was too quick.
I live in Asia, bro. Come on.
Because we were talking about this last night, favorite spreadable meat.
Is prosciutto spreadable?
No.
No, definitely not.
Pate.
Okay.
But what kind of pate?
All of them.
Okay. Favorite Brad Pitt movie?
I don't know what he's in.
He's in everything.
I knew she would not know.
I'm really
this.
Bad at pop culture.
I knew this. I told you this last night. I was like,
Brad Pitt. Fight Club?
Yeah. I
mean, okay, sure. Fight Club.
I said Fight Club as well. Most hated Zodiac sign.
I don't believe in any of that shit.
Damn, that's great. apparently everyone hates mine. Just putting
what
it
out. What are you?
There. I'm not saying what I am, but apparently everyone hates mine.
He's a Taurus. Gemini cusp.
No, not.
Yeah, you are, because I'm a Taurus Gemini cusp. That makes you a Taurus Gemini cusp.
No, I'm Gemini. You're just Taurus cusp.
Ugh. I thought you said you weren't going to tell us. There we are.
This is why people don't like
me. I had to set the record straight.
Fake news.
Journalism.
What are two historical figures you would put in your proverbial hot tub?
For intellectual conversation or something else?
Whatever you want. It's a proverbial hot tub.
Our last week's host was not able to answer this question. So.
In the hot tub, historical figures?
Sure.
Dead or alive?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Real or fiction? Yeah. Either
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, anything.
I say yes.
Oh, fiction can work too?
Fiction could work. Yeah.
Forrest Gump. And Ida B. Wells.
That's a hot, hot tub.
What would you, if you had a boat, what would you name it?
I had a boat for a while. Duh.
What did you name it?
Calpurnia.
Ooh. Huh.
Caesar's third wife, yeah. Who was also transgender.
I think we all knew that.
Yeah, duh.
I feel like you didn't have to spell that one out. Favorite DC restaurant bathroom?
Ooh, good one. For aesthetics, Room 11, of course. Shout out to the Bats. But for
what
community, the diner, or no, Trist. Trist has everyone that writes they write the grout jokes into the grout. Have you ever seen this?
I've never seen this.
You need
this.
To take a seat, sir, and check out.
I haven't been to Trist in like a decade.
Well, it's right around the corner, so we'll take a visit and put up a picture.
And it's been going on for more than a decade. Like, you sit down at grout, you sit down at Trist, and you look at the grout in the bathroom, and there's nothing but grout puns, like carved into it.
I'm grout.
That was shit.
That was horrible. I'm sure that one's right there.
Room 11's Bat Room actually has its own Instagram account, so everyone can look it up.
What is it called?
At Room 11 Bat Room DC, I think.
Nice. I feel like you guys should have called it the Bat Cave. I'm just putting that one out there.
We all just stared at Matthew with like a blank look on our face.
Bat Cave, guys. Obvious Batman.
which question am I going to ask us? Since you don't like pop culture... Or you don't.
I love Ariana Grande. Let's just put that out there. Okay.
Oh, fine. What is the one movie, TV show, something that you refuse to watch out of spite? Because everyone else has.
Well, I don't really have TV in Myanmar, right? So that kind of eliminates things. But, I mean, I love trash TV. That's my favorite thing in the world. But,
what you refuse to watch.
I refuse to watch. I have no rapid fire answer for that because I honestly just don't give that much of a shit, right? Yeah. Like, I have so many other things that TV's low on. I started watching Nashville on my friend's couch the other day before passing out, and I was like, this is the best trash TV I have ever seen in my life.
I still haven't seen that.
It's great.
What is, and this is my favorite question to ask, I ask this every time, what is your deathbed meal?
My deathbed, you know, this sounds really corny, but when I'm really like in the middle of something tough, or I've been in Myanmar and it's been raiding for 5 straight days and like nothing's working, I picture myself at Tail Up Goat sitting at the end of the bar with bread and cheese and a glass of orange wine with like, that's just it. And I still think like to this day, I'm like, that's like where my family is and where my... Like, I just thought it's like my safe place. I just go and have like a banging meal. People barely bother me. I probably have like a Negroni and Aperol Spritz. Yeah, like that's it. That's my meal.
This question is for Matthew.
Uh-oh.
What was the last celebrity that you fawned over?
Celebrity that I fawned over? Like in real life?
Yeah, sure. Real life. He's probably surfed. Tail Up Goat is a real celebrity hotspot these days.
Yeah, they dabble over there.
Barack or bust.
I can't talk about that. Chris Pine, man, he came in and like
you were talking about him last night.
I think he's like a good looking human in real life as well.
What were the other things you were saying?
A lot of people like who also waited on Chris Pine like at different restaurants were like, oh, he's like a very skinny Wolverine.
I say, is that Batman? Who is that?
Chris Pine. He's
Kirk.
Kirk.
Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Just for the glasses, I'm in.
But yeah, he's got. Nice and chiseled features, dreamy blue eyes. I thought he held up in real life.
Okay.
Oh.
Good.
Tight.
Chris Pine, we want you on the show.
Victoria, this is not a rapid fire question. I just forgot to ask this before. Let's talk about nightlife in Myanmar. What's the cocktail scene these days?
Yeah, what is the cocktail?
What's a cocktail? There are a few people in Yangon who are really doing a good push to try and get cocktails out there. A woman named Jen and a woman named Nikki, which, first of all, like, dope that it's women running it. I saw my first bottle of Coqui Torino in Myanmar like 2 months ago, and I saw it and I almost cried at the bar because it was like, this is what I've missed so much. I mean, Asia has traditional palate flavors that lean maybe more towards fruits and things like that. Like even the cigarettes are fruit flavored over there.
Nice.
Gin and tonics, Myanmar is a former British empire, right? Okay. So you've got the gin, you have IPAs, things like that that have snuck in. Myanmar actually has a really interesting brewery history. Their brewery history really represents their political history. So you have nationalized breweries, you have breweries that were run by Japan during the World War II occupation, things like that. So it's a big beer city and it's a big whiskey city. But you also need to know that those companies are owned by the military. And if anyone's even bothered to write the word Myanmar into a news line lately, you'll see that the military has been up to some questionable business. So the house party rules the scene when it comes to Yangon right now.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah.
House party.
Yeah, house parties are back. Like, you know, we had old house parties here in Mount Pleasant and like Howard back in the day. Like, my life, again, randomly has come full circle to the house party.
Oh, man. I'm all about bringing back the house party. I'm talking records.
What's your house doing tonight?
Oh, yes, man.
It's talking a big game right now.
Yeah.
Apparently next Monday.
I'm making Queen Amon, guys. It's a little pastry from...
Matthew's a new homeowner for those who haven't
you
been
own a keep, home?
Keeping track.
I'm a homeowner. I know.
He has a living wall.
That's all I have, guys.
he does.
How many succulents do you own?
There's a lot. We have a green room.
Yeah.
But anyways, enough about me. Eddie, you were going to ask a little game.
Oh, am I good to do this?
Yeah, I mean...
Okay, we're going to do a Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Marry, Fuck, Kill.
What? This is my favorite game.
Okay. Fuck, Marry, Kill. Matthew's having a really good time making fun of me. That's because he's hungover.
We all have a good time making fun of you.
The second one. Okay. There was actually news this week about Virgilio Martinez opening up a new restaurant in the Amazon. He is on the list of the top 50 restaurants in the world out of Lima, Peru. So if you were to eat anywhere in the world, would you choose Amazon, the desert, or the middle of Siberia?
We're laughing because I told Eddie this is a horrible question, by the way.
That is kind of, I mean, like...
Fuck, Mary Kill, please.
I feel like you're baiting me.
No, it's really
There's
not.
Nothing wrong. No. These are like the worst places to eat.
Wait, so Amazon, no Siberia, or...
Okay, so in the middle of the rainforest, in the middle of a desert, or in the middle of a frozen tundra.
Yo, shout out to the people that are making food in the desert right now, because I'll never forget when I was like... So I was in Jordan, hiking up, like... the weird religious mountain sites that you'd never think you'd be... Like, there's nothing there.
For the record, they definitely listened to our podcast.
Ayo. there's nothing there. And I was like ready to pass out. Like, I'm this 22-year-old white girl who obviously, like, you know, is passing out from wearing long sleeves in the Middle East after 2 weeks.
All black.
And this... All black everything.
All black everything.
And then this little girl comes up to me seeing that I'm about to die, and she gave me some kind of pastry and some sweet tea that I swear to you must have had some kind of drug in it. Because immediately after that, I'm like, all right. Let's keep going.
The elixir of life.
Yeah, like, let's do this. So I'm going to say go with the desert people. So marry the desert people that keep me alive. I fuck with the Amazon. So I'll say let's fuck the Amazon. And then Siberia,
Siberia.
Siberia is an easy kill, I feel like.
Yeah.
Eddie, what would you do in this situation? Because this is your question.
Well, for me, because I like cold weather. I'm a Swede at heart.
Eddie, what is the Viking. Coldest weather you've experienced?
By the way, this Friday I'm bartending on a Viking
ship. Didn't you grow up in Virginia?
Yeah, like, Eddie, what is the coldest weather you've experienced?
I went to college in upstate New York.
That's cute.
Lake effect snows.
Like, that's really... Okay, like, get out of here with that.
All right, so he's obviously fucking...
If you don't know Ithaca, you are walking uphill to class...
Boy,
both ways. Somehow it happens.
I know Buffalo. Talk about it. Further north than your Ithaca.
I hear it's gorgeous.
Okay.
Ithaca is gorgeous. I would... Oh, God. Actually, no. I would marry Siberia. I would fuck with dessert. And Desert. And I would kill off the Amazon.
Well, everyone else is killing off the Amazon, too. So you fit right in.
Get in line, bro. Victoria, thank you so much for joining
us
today.
If it wasn't for the Jack, I saw Jack and he was just like, you have to do it. And I was like, only with them.
Well, thank you.
Actually, what you said is...
I was like, Jack.
You can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, like the Spotify. And find us on all social medias at ShiftDrinkDC. We are serious about doing these rants reread. So, like, if you guys have had just, like, weird interactions or just, like, want to rant about something industry, send it our way, Instagram or...
Email, or
you can email, email.
And somehow you can email me.
TonyBraxtonFan101@gmail.com.
Yes, we will reread them. We will do it anonymously.
Yeah,
very so much you so. Can call out whoever you want.
You can trust us.
I think it's
it'd be fun.
Good hearty fun.
Yeah, and you know, let's get it out there.
Yeah.
Special thank you to Jeffrey Lamoureux for our sweet intro music and DJ RecTech for the hilarious sound effects.
We will have to ask him for a rant sound effect for when that happens. And next week, Matthew's going to embarrass me because Bill Murray's going to cuckoo for cuckoo melons, a tangential history of the Mexican sour gherkin.
Nice. Bye, friends.
Thanks for
joining.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.